Spirit of life, may you give this family and every family who is suffering and under challenge strength to endure, strength to continue, and strength to love in this life. Amen. It is just wonderful to be with each of you today because your former pastor tried to get me over here a number of times. He was just amazing and persistent, but I was working in Spartanburg at the time serving that congregation, and so when I had a rare Sunday off, I'm sorry, but I just didn't want to travel over and preach to you then. However, I'm very grateful for the opportunity now. I see a few familiar faces. Bo, it's good to see you. I think the last time I was here might have been when you had a cluster gathering many years ago. This morning I want to talk about the new thinking that was referenced in our chalice lighting by Albert Einstein's words. That it will take a new level of thinking. And of course, that quote refers to a letter that he wrote in thinking about, now that there was atomic weaponry, how would we move forward as a world, based on the idea that war could no longer be carried out in the way that it had been, because ultimately the entire world would be destroyed. And even as that fear has waxed and waned and waxed again over the years, we realize that there are many existential problems that we face in this life and in our world. And we seek, I think, that new thinking that he referenced. But what could that new thinking be? I mean, how do we know what we don't know? And here we are. This morning, I want to talk about what I feel like is actually a revolution in thinking. And I'd like for you to become part of that revolution. Maybe you already are. Now, of course, being that we are tiny beings swimming in a huge ocean, sometimes it's not always so easy to see trends or see what's happening. And certainly when we turn on, or I don't know, we don't turn on that way anymore. I guess we turn on like this, or we turn on like this. But when we get the news from the powers that be in our world, we tend to think, well, things are going to hell in a handbasket. But I'm not sure that's true. And I want to offer some ways not only to deal with that thinking, but to think about how we can be part of this new world. Now, if you're in a hurry and you have somewhere to go, I have a 7-word summary, and you're gonna really think I'm amazing when you hear it, right? Feeling good is better than feeling bad. You're welcome. Now, wait. There's a corollary. The corollary is, and talking good is better than talking bad. Okay. All right, those of you that need to go, make for the door. The rest of you, I do want to unpack that a little bit, lest you think I'm kind of simplistic, which I might be, but stay with me. Sure, these things are obvious, right? We like to feel good. But is it virtuous? Well, I'd like to put out the idea that maybe it is. Feeling good is better, not only for ourselves, but for the world. Sometimes we get trapped in this idea that we have no control over our emotions, and gosh knows we certainly don't have control over what happens to us in this life. We can get stuck in negative responses. This is, of course, the domain of Buddhist practices to overcome our negative responses to the stimuli that come in. It's also a part of our quest to be good and selfless people. And yet, unless we cultivate and nourish good feelings in ourselves, we are very unlikely to cultivate and nourish, very unlikely to cultivate and nourish them in others. For those of you who have flown on commercial airplanes, you remember the safety talk: put on your own oxygen mask first before you reach out and try to help somebody else. Unless we do that, we really can't be effective. Sure, we nod. That's right. But there's a lot of research lately that's showing us just how deeply important this is. Feeling good is now the domain of a burgeoning science many of you must have heard of, called positive psychology. Rather than focusing on pathologies, how it is that we humans have come to have so many mental illnesses and so many problems in our heads, dealing with our lives and the world, this branch of psychology seeks to focus on how it is that we manage effectively, how it is that we are resilient, how it is that we are strong and creative and giving and generous. The title of a recent book, Flourishing, by Martin Seligman, the father of positive psychology, you may have heard of. In the past 20 years since he became head of the new Positive Psychology Association, there's been a whole plethora of research about what it is that helps human beings find the good life. And yes, while it is true that many times we have very little control over what happens to us, we may have more control in our response than we realize. One of Seligman's acolytes, Barbara Fredrickson, wrote a book cleverly titled Positivity in 2009, where she actually came up with a mathematical ratio of emotional states that we should try to aim for. Now, this is a little bit of fuzzy science because it is, after all, a judgment call about, are you feeling good or are you feeling bad? And people self-report this. But looking at a number of subjects, in her research, asking people through the day what their emotional state was like, she found that, yes, indeed, there is a ratio of positive to negative states that actually there's a tipping point for that. And that's about 3-1. So, for example, somebody says something critical to you, you would register that as putting you in a negative emotional state. If you held on to it for several hours, you might register as that as 4 or 5 times of being in a negative emotional state. And yes, just as we have suspected, it is true that our positive emotional states need to outnumber our negative emotional states. Or, in plainer terms, bad stuff hurts more than good stuff helps. So what is the positivity ratio we should be aiming for? And why should we be aiming for that? Well, it turns out that about at 3-1, 3 positive states of being to every negative state of being, at about 3-1, something changes in our brains. Our creativity is stronger. Our generosity opens up. We leave behind a feeling of scarcity, of I got mine and the heck with you. At 6-1, you might be one of those people who spreads positivity wherever you go. Here's the kicker. Americans, on average, are at about what ratio, according to her research? It's the same ratio that I'm at, and I took the test twice. About 2-1. Now, as I said, this is a little bit fuzzy, and I don't think we need to get caught up in the numbers themselves, but just the very idea of shooting for a goal, of how can I get myself into a positive mindset, even when terrible things are happening. And sometimes that's not possible, and sometimes it's a force. On the other hand, do we need to cogitate on the negative, which I believe sometimes we get lost in? At a ratio of about 1 to 1 is where clinical depression kicks in. Now, lest you think we should always go for only the positive, at around 11 to 1, that is 11 positive states of mind for every 1 negative, probably not a good idea. That might be on the verge of manic depression, of mania, the mania part of manic depression, if you can work that. Now, I don't mean to be too simplistic about this, but it does give us a lot of food for thought. In every situation, is there something positive to be found? Is there a bright side of the road? My guess is not. On the other hand, in every situation, can we reflect on and choose where we are and choose where we try to go? And this, then, of course, is a spiritual practice. As Unitarian Universalist, I would submit that that's our calling, to look for, possibly not to find, but certainly to look for the positive whenever we can. Again, it's not just about ourselves. It's about the world that we want to create. And I know you're here for all the wonderful things that this fellowship offers: camaraderie, support, mutual sympathy. But you're also here to find a way to create a better world. So when we are feeling positive, here's what positive psychology has shown. We get smarter, we're more creative, we're open to multiple possibilities. It's an upward virtuous cycle. We're actually able to do math better. Experiments with college students, showing them just simple pictures. On the one, showing pictures for one group, showing them pictures of playing puppies, versus another group, showing them pictures of starving children. Which group was then able to solve the puzzles better? The group that had been watching the playing puppies. I don't mean to imply that we should turn our heads away when there is suffering. Certainly not. But can we not be mindful about the experiences that we seek out? In a recent book, some of you might have heard of it, by Steven Pinker, called Enlightenment Now, he talks about the heuristic fallacy, the fallacy that we have that we are exposed to all the information there is, and therefore we make a judgment about the world based on the information that we see. Now, how many of you think that we're exposed to all the information there is? I don't think so. And yet, when we go into social media, the internet, the television, and seek for information about the world around us, what do we find that is being reported on? Is it about the king's great elephant and his great recovery after sitting with his ministers for 6 nights? I don't think so. But by goodness, you'd hear about the king's, about Sweetface almost trampling his handlers, right? Whatever terrible news there is happening in the world, we will certainly hear about it. Whatever good news there is of sharing and joy and human generosity and people getting along together, I submit, is extremely underreported. You know, because that doesn't get the major look. And I'm just as bad as anybody about that. As I was trying to wrap up this sermon this morning, sure enough, I had to look at that Google feed, because you never know what might be out there. And yet, that's my practice, I've found. To find, discover, to lift up, not what is going wrong, but what is going right. And I believe that this should be a practice for all of us as Unitarian Universalists. Now, we are not the only religious group that tries to hold that up. In Christianity, there is a doctrine of forgiveness, forgiving 7 times 70, and therefore being able to move on and find the positive in life again. After all, it is said, the kingdom of heaven is in you, is in each of us. And that, to me, speaks to our ability to choose where is heaven and where is hell. In Buddhism, we are encouraged to forget ourselves and move towards giving towards others. And if we are busy giving to other people, it makes it kind of hard to pay attention to all that stuff that's going wrong. The philosopher Epictetus said that the problem is not what happens, but how we respond to what happens. Okay, great. We all knew this, but it's good to be reminded, right? I'll close that section with a quote from Paulo Coelho, the author, who wrote that when each day is the same as the next, it's because people fail to recognize the good things that happen in their lives every day that the sun rises. The second part of my message about this new thinking is not as much about our new thinking, it's about our thinking and then our speaking. I do believe the world is created through our language. We are co-creating it every day and every moment that we communicate with one another. Language is not merely descriptive. Language creates. I'll show you. Apple. Anybody not think of an apple? I did not describe an apple in any way, but I created that image in your brain. Now, granted, some of you might have thought of a red apple, some of you a green apple, some of you to the apple trees in your backyard. I get it. There's differences. And yet, we have immense, enormous power in the way that we would speak with one another, in the world that we will create. And so, we should be mindful and very careful about what we say when we are describing this world. Because it might be that we are not describing the world that we want. We are instead describing the opposite. Now, it is said that humans think in images, right? And so when we have an image or a vision, that our mind will move us towards that. Just like when I said apple, I bet very few of you saw the letters A-P-P-L-E, right? You saw a picture in your head. Well, for any of you that play golf, you know if you're teeing up and you're thinking, don't hit the sand trap, don't hit the sand trap, don't hit the sand trap. Or for a better analogy, I ride bikes or ride a bike, and what will happen if I'm going through a narrow, tight area and I'm going too fast and I'm saying, don't hit the wall, don't hit the wall, don't hit the wall. We need to be mindful about the world that we want to see and the world that we talk about. Because sometimes I think the world that we talk about is not that beautiful world that works for everyone. It's ironic, isn't it? Because we so badly want to save the world, want to be good to each other, want people to have lives of purpose and joy. We want those things so much, and so we look for the things that are in the way, the problems. And then, of course, our handicap now is we become focused on the problems, and we talk about the problems. Which is not to say we should never speak of problems and never seek to solve them. I just want to invite some balance in our language. Some refocusing and reframing, where we look for what's working, and we lift that up and we tell those stories of people of different ethnicities getting along and working together, of people across age lines agreeing on things and working for common cause, of people giving to one another. Because when we are reminded of those, not only do we feel better, but we generate hope and we generate more commitment, I believe, than merely focusing on the problems. I was very moved a couple of weeks ago. My daughter, who is about to graduate from high school any day now, my youngest daughter, gave the sermon at the Asheville Congregation for Earth Day. And she wouldn't read it to us beforehand, probably with good reasons. Like, I'm not going to let Mom hear it. And I was blown away because she made the proposition, and I hadn't even thought of it before, she made the proposition that people older than me, she's 17, people older than me, you need to be careful about what you are saying to us, because if you aren't, you will raise a generation of hopeless people. And so I thought, ooh, I have to be really more careful even than I thought I'd been. The last thing we need is a generation of hopeless people. Now, there are some of us, I know, I used to be one of them, who believe there is very little hope. The problem with that is, remember, we are not describing the world with our words. We are creating it. And when I got that clarity, it's been about 15 years ago now, any of you that read my bio might have seen that I used to be an environmental science teacher. When I got the clarity that I was not describing the world that would die because of species extinction, the world that would burn up because of global warming, the world that would be poisoned beyond repair. When I got the message that I was not merely describing that world, but that I was creating it in the words that I used to speak with people, and even occasionally to speak with my students, when I understood that fully, is when I began to embark on the path to ministry. Because I realized the responsibility that we all have to be mindful with our words. And that's probably the most important message that I have. And just to go back to an example of the way that our language can impact something, I'll choose at one situation and let you listen to two different verbalizations in response. Two people submitted some forms to register their businesses, but they were incorrectly filled out. However, they were answered by two different officials. Consider what your reaction would be if you received this. We regret to inform you that we cannot process your application to register your business name since you have neglected to provide sufficient information. Please complete all sections of the attached form and return it to us. Contrast with the way that the second official wrote. Congratulations on your new business. To register your business name, we need some additional information. If you return the attached form with highlighted areas filled in, we will be able to send you your registration certificate within 2 weeks. We wish you success in your newest endeavor. This is yet another example of how we can be mindful in the way that we speak, how we can be mindful and remember to choose. Of course, we each hold the power to choose how we interpret what comes our way. Just for a moment, bring to mind something good that has happened to you this past week, just in the past week. It can be little, could be great big, but something good. Okay, now if you can say it in a couple words, just blurt it out loud. Anything happened good for someone? Stop raining. Well, hallelujah. I invite you to get in touch with the feeling in your body right now. And what happened when you thought about that good thing? I won't go down the path of thinking of something negative, but I'm sure we'll all do that on our own, right? I guess in closing, the message that I leave you with is that we are very powerful people, more powerful than we realize. And now that we are learning more and more about the ways that our brain works, the way we create the realities that we live in, and the way that we create the reality out in the greater world by the way we speak about this reality, perhaps then we can create that new thinking and that new world that Einstein was so sure we needed. Thank you.